Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
Hey, go-getters, let Noom Sport Hydration Tablets power up your fun and keep you ready to move. Simply drop, dissolve, and enjoy crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade or lemon lime. With 5 essential electrolytes and crafted with clean, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free ingredients, Noom should be your go-to hydration choice. Because when you're hydrated, you can do more, go further, and recover quicker. Shop now on NoomLife.com and get ready for endless fun, because anything can happen after noon.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
If your small business is booming, you might say,
cha-ching.
But you should say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we'll help your growing business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select 2 or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week and back with a bit of a classic topic today. Very excited about this one. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host for today. And I'm joined as ever by the Rank God, Mr. Sam Tai. How you doing, mate?
Yes, hello, mate. Hello, everybody. How are we?
Yeah, all good. It's good. It's been a nice bank holiday weekend. We've had the sun is shining. It's been mostly lovely. The Masters was on. Can't complain. Can't complain at all. And how are you to our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones?
Very good, mate. Very good. As you say, yeah, mostly a nice weekend, wasn't it? A couple of downpours, but the sun actually came out and that cheers us up. We haven't seen that for a long time.
It's glorious out now as well, sitting here watching.
It is.
Watching
it's cold outside. Though. I'm doing this from the garden. Just posted a picture of what I'm doing right now. My new setup is absolutely a star. It's an ironing board as a desk, and it is absolutely elite. It's so long and it goes across the whole of the sofa. So I've got like the remote controls if I need them. I've got my phone. I've got an iPad, I've got a coffee cup, I've got a glass of water, everything I need, as well as a laptop and a microphone, on this ironing board, which obviously can be put to the perfect height as I sit on the couch. Lads, I've absolutely nailed this. I can't believe I haven't been doing this for 2.5 years.
Well, there you have it. The professionalism of Ranks FC in one fell swoop.
I'm so smart.
That I don't think anyone's ever doubted. Right, let's roll on to things we love before we get on to our main topic today. We're going to be talking about the best front threes in Europe, or compiling the best front threes in Europe. Not necessarily the ones that all play together, just picking out those players from each of Europe's top five leagues who have shone across the course.
This is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, I am too. Really am too. Before that, we have some things we love from this weekend. Sam, why don't you kick us off?
Sure, yeah, okay. I'll go with loving Unai Emery's march up the table. Incredible, isn't it? This is one of the biggest stories in the Premier League at the moment, and that is really saying something, considering the fact that the race for the title looks so strong. The fight to not get relegated is literally between about 8 or 9 teams. It's very odd, actually, in that situation, in that context, that a team surging up into 6th place would be such a storyline. But when Unai Emery took the Villa job, they were 17th after 13 games and they were 2 points off bottom. That is the situation that he inherited. And as you've no doubt seen, the statistic will tell you that only Arsenal and Man City have taken more points since Unai Emery's appointment at Villa than Villa themselves. So to say it's quite the turnaround would be a bit of an understatement, I would say. And don't know if they will actually qualify for Europe. There's a Brighton have a couple games in hand and they look fantastic. Liverpool can still swoop in quite clearly. So we'll see. We'll see. But at least from Villa's perspective, it's been 5-6 excellent months. And for Unai Emery, I think I'm particularly pleased for him because he was desperate to get back into the Premier League. He had like this burning desire to come and take another Premier League coaching job to really prove himself because, you know, the Arsenal spell was pretty mixed. And unfortunately, he was mocked for a couple of different reasons. He wanted to set the record straight. He's an excellent coach. He knows it. He wants to show the rest of England that's the case. And right now, he is looking like a bit of a king, in my opinion. Superb job since taking the reins early November.
Yeah. If any Aston Villa fans want to give us a shout out to say thank you very much to Marco Silva's Fulham, you're more than welcome. Obviously, it was a game at the Cottage that spelled the end of Steven Gerrard's reign at Villa Park and meant that Unai Emery came in. But no, generally, I think when you're...
That's a very Lampard transition.
It was a Lampard transition. I knew exactly what was coming. No, but seriously, they're really doing well. Emery is a fantastic manager. And there can be questions, and I think there can be fair questions about what his ceiling is. Obviously, we saw him at PSG, we saw him at Arsenal. Especially at Arsenal, it was one of those where it just didn't feel right, really, at any given point. It just didn't seem to click for him. And so there was this kind of, you know, sort of maybe comedy idea of what he was. And obviously that wasn't helped by the sketches in the media. But understanding, you know, what a brilliant coach Emery is and seeing what he's done in Spain, especially with Sevilla and then Villarreal, his ability to take a side and make them more than the sum of their parts, I think, is incredible. And if Villa are in Europe next season, if Villa do get that 7th Conference League spot, Dean, would you bet against Unai Emery going all the way in another European competition? Because I certainly wouldn't.
No, definitely not. I think Villa's biggest challenge actually will be keeping hold of Unai Emery beyond next season, because that will be the next caveat for him. And the temptation to go to another bigger club again, because as soon as you start to taste success at a club like Villa, you know, the vultures will begin circling, and a club like Tottenham or somebody of that level will probably be thinking, oh, actually, he might be able to do a job. And at the moment, they won't be going there because Unai Emery is definitely very happy with what he's got at hand. But that will be the test. We'll have to see. I think there's a few players, you know, Emi Martinez, for example, he'll be in that same situation too at Villa, whereby, you know, does he stick this out and wait to try and make it into Europe with Villa? Or if, again, somebody like Tottenham offers money for him in the summer, would he be tempted to go there? It's that very fine line, isn't it? And as you say, Emery, because he got burned once before at Arsenal, will probably be a little bit more hesitant next time. He's got to make sure that there's a good fit. But, oh, look, if they can carry on like this, he probably needs to get a couple out of the club in the summer. But once he brings in a couple of additions too, that squad's going to be so streamlined. They'll be definitely ready to push for top seven.
Yeah, it feels like it. And look, Villa are a massive club. I think that sometimes people forget this, considering the years of bouncing between Championship and survival and just about surviving under Dean Smith and then starting to kick up the league. Villa are a huge force in British football. And you know, one of my favourite statistics ever is that when John Terry joined Villa, the first game he played was a sold-out Villa Park, and that was the highest home attendance he's ever played in front of, you know, for a home player, because Villa Park is a bigger stadium than Stamford Bridge. And when you look at those kind of things, it's easy to kind of forget that, I think. And sometimes it's nice to see one of the giants rising again. And if Villa can continue under Emery and continue on this trajectory, there's no reason we can't see a Martin O'Neill-esque dynasty here at Villa. So there's lots to look forward to, I think, at Aston Villa right now.
But back to your point, you know, shouts out Douglas Luiz getting red carded at the Cottage, forcing Gerrard out and starting this whole ball rolling. Fantastic. You were absolutely spot on, Jack. You were joking, but you also definitely weren't.
Well, no, absolutely not. That's a ripple for you. Yeah. So you can enjoy those ones. Right, Dean, what have you got?
Well, I've got a 40-year-old podcaster who's an absolute legend of the game. And no, it's not me, lads. It's not me. It's Ben Foster. Oh, God, me and Fozzie have got so much in common, lads. Okay, maybe I couldn't have done what he did at the weekend, though. Because obviously, yeah, very successful at podcasting, our mate Ben Foster, a pal of the industry now. But he's gone back to playing football. Used to play for Man United in England. Now gone back to Wrexham. They had a game on Monday against Notts County. It's a top of the table battle. And Wrexham won 3-2 with Ben Foster saving a penalty at injury time. A great save too. And his analysis of it as well was like, oh, I could tell by the way he spotted the ball and the way he walked back exactly where it was going. Like, Wrexham in
non-league... Re-spotted the ball for what it was.
Yeah.
He went back to it. Like, oh, God, the drama.
To have a goalkeeper with this much experience and nous is absolutely unbelievable. And this is why it helps when you've got, you know, stars of Hollywood running your football club and you can entice people like this to come back into the game. Obviously, the Wrexham documentary was already a success. Like, the next series of it is going to be absolutely insane. They're not quite there yet into the Football League. They are 3 points clear of Notts County. They have a game in hand, so they're basically there. But the story's not quite finished yet. But unbelievable what they're managing at Wrexham. And yeah, I didn't actually manage to see the game live. I watched it on catch-up because I was watching some other non-league lads. And we all know that my local team, Horton and Hersham, are absolutely flying. Two games left, top of the league still. Yesterday, I went to watch them. Big game. They won 6-0. They were 5-0 up with Eddie Simon scoring all five. He scored five goals in 35 minutes. A 15-minute hat-trick, I think he had, or maybe it was even a 10-minute hat-trick. This lad is absolutely ridiculous. During the game, I actually had a big agent, like, does some serious deals, messaging me, asking if he needs to get into the Football League. He's like, tell me what I need to know. Like, what chance can he do it? What do I need to know about him? And I'm like, it's hard to say. He's a 27-year-old dentist. It's really hard to say what he's ready for at this stage. But he is in the last 14 games.
He's got 40 goals this season now, I believe. 41, maybe.
Well, he's got 27 goals in his last 14 games, and five of them are hat-tricks. It's absolutely ludicrous. He's the non-league Haaland. And it's just so funny. One of the goals he scored, lad, I think it's the best goal I've seen all season. It came across to him. He took a touch. It was like, it might have been a half volley rather than a volley. But he smashes it from 30 yards. And it looked, as he's first hit it, I thought, oh, well, that's going over the fence. That's going in the car park. And it dips and literally goes into the very top corner. It was mental. It was absolutely mental. But yeah, it's fun. Non-league football is my thing this weekend.
Yeah, well, it was a great weekend. And saw a lot of it. There was a lot of coverage. There was a lot of love for non-league football over the course of the weekend, which is always good to see as well. Your Walton and Hersham are top of that league. My Hamwell survived. They are
oh,
safe.
So we'll be playing you next season, maybe.
So as long as you win the league, there will be the Dean Jones-Jack Collins derby in the South Central Premier. Step three.
Mate, all very I will exciting. Be beating you up in the car park after that one.
Can't wait. The unbelievable vibe. I'm going to come up a couple of divisions, but not too many, because I want to talk about the Championship this weekend. The Easter weekend, for you know those not in the UK, is a really special weekend of football, but especially kind of lower down than the Premier League, because there's games on Good Friday and then there's games on Easter Monday. It's one of those weekends that can often define the Championship season. And it was definitive in the Championship season because Burnley secured promotion on Friday night with a win at Middlesbrough. And then last night, they beat Sheffield United, who are second in the table, 2-0, to basically secure the title. They're 14 points clear with six games to play. I mean, it's not done, but it's done. Sheffield United, 5 points clear of Luton in third, who they have a game in hand as well. So Sheffield, you know, the Blades will expect to see that one out, I think. But it's been kind of all chaos in the playoff places as well. Luton, Middlesbrough, Millwall, Blackburn currently occupying those spots. But Preston have been, I think, six wins from their last seven under Ryan Lowe. They've rose up the table. Norwich couldn't beat Rotherham, which would have brought them into the picture. And Coventry came back from 2-0 down at home against Watford to draw 2-2. Should have had a penalty as well late on in this game to win it. Which would have brought them up to 62 as well. There's five games left and the playoff races are so, so exciting. There was a heap of absolutely wonderful games. A hat-trick of 2-alls that were live on Sky Sports yesterday. First, Huddersfield, Blackburn Rovers, then Coventry, Watford. And then we got to the late games, Bristol City, Middlesbrough, 2-all as well. Burnley ruined it by winning 2-0 in the fourth game of the day. But it was a real nice sort of flow of Championship football all day long yesterday. And at the bottom of the table, it's no easier. Paul Ince has just been sacked by Reading. They are in the relegation zone by a point.
That's overdue.
I feel a bit sorry for Paul Ince because...
Mate, don't.
Well, they just got a six-game... they just got a six-point reduction. They're like, it's not their play on the pitch which has left them in the relegation zone. They would be 17th if that reduction hadn't gone. Oh, no, that's fine. But like, the point I'm making is that he's a bit like, well, this is definitely not my doing. Like, he's got to that point. Although he did come out and say, we had 8 first-team players out. Pep Guardiola or Klopp couldn't have made us win yesterday. Which seems a bit harsh when they lost 2-1 in the 95th minute.
Paul
like, Ince my guy.
Should not be talking about those two at any point in time.
To have the self-confidence of Paul Ince would be something I think we could all get on board with. But it's really tight down the bottom as well. Blackpool and Wigan look doomed, sadly. But Reading on 41, Cardiff on 42 with a game in hand. QPR on 43, Huddersfield on 43. It's really, really tight down there for that last spot in the relegation zone down to League One. So keep an eye on the bottom of the Championship. 5-6 games to go, depending on a couple of games in hand, and a lot to play for at both ends of the table.
Yeah, Monday was good. I sort of dipped in and out of the Championship stuff. I watched some Danish football, watched Copenhagen and Aalborg, and I finished the evening by watching Barcelona versus Girona, which I was sure would be the best game. But was actually by far the worst. By far the worst.
Yeah, that's what you get for not believing in the Championship on Easter Monday. This is tradition and you must stick with it. Right, so after the break, we're going to be talking about the best front threes in Europe. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC. We're time for our main segment. We're going to be looking at the best front threes in Europe. Sam, over to you.
Yeah, credit to Mr. Dean Jones on this one. Very good idea that he came up with. We'll go league by league. We'll start in the Premier League and go through Europe's top five leagues. And we're going to nominate the best front threes from each league based on form this season. And, you know, a pinch of overall quality as well, I think, is important to factor in. But really, we're looking at who's performed the best this season. Then we're going to make up a fantasy front three, the best we can offer for each of the leagues. And then I would suggest at the end, we go ahead and rank them. How's that sound?
100%.
It sounds on brand is what it sounds.
100%. Right. Oh, wow. So form this season, very important. Remember that as we go through. And any statistics that I read out will be league only. Okay. Let's start in the Premier League. And it's an easy start, I think, really. Up front, man in form, 9 goals in 11 games. He scores basically every time he takes to the pitch. He's just equaled a record set by Sergio Aguero for consecutive goals in away games. It's Ollie Watkins for Aston. Sorry, hang on, no. Erling Haaland, 30 goals. 30 goals for Erling Haaland now, and 5 assists in 26 starts. He's just scored a brace at St Mary's. I can't decide if the second one was a scissor kick or a bicycle kick. That's the situation we're in. The goal was so good, I can't even figure it out. So let's lock him in up front. And let's go ahead and lock in Bukayo Saka on the right as well. I'm not accepting any opposition to that. He's the only Premier League player to hit double figures for goals and assists. So he's 12 goals and 10 assists. He's been Arsenal's best player this season, basically undroppable. And I don't think you can really debate this one. However, on the left, we may have our first conundrum, guys. I don't think that there is an obvious player here who commands a place on the left. I think there are three or four, who have a genuine shout. And I would like to hand the floor to Dean Jones to try and decipher the differences between Gabriel Martinelli and Marcus Rashford to kick us off here. Because those are the two prime candidates I think we've got.
Oh, are they? Okay. So Rashford is the most obvious one. He, since the World Cup, has been in absolutely ludicrous form. Again, has been United's main source of goals. Like City would turn to Haaland, United turn to Rashford, not for as many, but certainly for the same impact. Martinelli, different kind of impact player, isn't he? They share out the goals more evenly at Arsenal, but Martinelli does definitely turn up. I wasn't actually expecting him to be the main person you put into the conversation. Actually, that's caught me a little bit by surprise.
Who was it?
You were going to say Jack Grealish.
Yeah, okay.
And the reason that I would throw Jack Grealish into this conversation as the third option is especially how we're weighing up this front three, because Jack Grealish plays with Erling Haaland. So if we were to actually field a front three here, would we want that familiarity of Jack Grealish playing on the left so that he understands Haaland a bit better? Or are we happy with a Marcus Rashford or Martinelli? I have to say, I think, like, my hunch from the first moment we set out to do this show was that Rashford is the best left-sided player in the Premier League right now. I totally will accept there are arguments to be made for Martinelli. I don't think, though, Martinelli is an all-round footballer. At his best, is as good as Rashford at his best. That's probably the main argument I'd make on that. As I say, yeah, I'd throw Grealish in a little bit from my end, just because, one, the impact he's had at Man City since the World Cup, particularly recently, and the fact that the other guys can't have is that he understands Erling Haaland as much as anyone in the world actually could.
Yeah, it's really tricky. My hunch was Rashford as well until you said Martinelli, and now my hunch is Martinelli.
Is it?
Yeah. I think that it's probably just a little bit understated how impressive he's been in terms of progression, in terms of stepping up. When, you know, Arsenal lost Gabby Jesus and then Nketiah as well, the fact that Martinelli jumped into the centre and Arsenal didn't really miss a beat, I think, was really impressive. And just his kind of versatility, his ability to carry, and his explosiveness. Yeah, I'd probably give Martinelli the edge.
What are you looking for, Sam? What do you want in your left-sided forward, I guess it comes down to?
So
they're different.
I think it would be a little bit dangerous to get too hung up on whether or not they could actually play together in real life. Because as we move through the rest of the leagues, this is going to be genuinely obstructive if we set that precedent. So let's put that aside for now and forget that Grealish and Erling Haaland have a real relationship. And to me, I mean, I've got Rashford and Martinelli. You know, they're almost level pegging on goals and assists in terms of production. They've got 14 goals and 4 assists for Martinelli, 15 goals and 4 assists for Rashford. They're dead even, more or less. The way I would split them, personally, is I think that Rashford is more important to his team. I think Martinelli is like the third or fourth most important part of the attack, which sounds like a criticism, but it's massively not when your colleagues are Gabby Jesus and Martin Odegaard. So I would go for Rashford because I think they lean on him a little bit more and he has stood up under that pressure. Although I think Grealish is a fine shout. And I think Kaoru Mitoma is exceptional too. So just a tiny little shout for him too. But look, if I've got the deciding vote, I'm going to make it Rashford.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. I think we'd have a war on our hands if we didn't put Rashford in. So I think it's the sensible choice. And also, I like the other factor. I think
The other factor we're missing that's very important is that Manor Solomon's only been fit for half the season. Otherwise, he'd be in this conversation.
I think Rashford would impact more Premier League teams than Martinelli would on his own. Like, Martinelli obviously fits into this system brilliantly at Arsenal, and it's absolutely ideal. Mm. I feel like Rashford probably just has the edge on him as an individual.
It's close. Okay. Very close.
Yeah, it's very close. Very close. But let's take it. Let's take it and move onwards. Where are we going to second, Sam?
Okay, let's go to Italy, where I think we can lock in a couple straight off the bat, just as we did with the Premier League. The standout number nine in Italy has obviously been Victor Osimhen. 21 goals to his name, 4 assists as well. Takes an entire back line to slow him down and marshal him. Absolutely an insane player. And to his left should really be his clubmate, Kvaradona. 12 goals and 10 assists, exactly the same as Bukayo Saka, coincidentally. And he's been absolutely unplayable. Then we need to move to the right. And this is where the debate kicks in here on the right-hand side for Serie A. And I think there's also a bit of an issue here, which is that, you know, ideally you plan out this front three and you've got two wingers and a striker. In Serie A, there's a lot of back threes and front twos as a combo. So Napoli and Lazio play 4-3-3, fine. But Roma do not, Inter do not, Atalanta do not, and Juve mostly do not either. And AC Milan don't have a right side. It's non-existent half the time. So we're in a bit of a pickle here, I think. And I'm wondering what the genuine best option here is on the right, because there's some natural options that probably don't meet the quality test. We might have to get a little bit creative, and I do have an idea here. But just in case I've missed anything, Jack, do you have any solutions for me?
Yeah, I completely understand what you're saying. I mean, the three players that I think stand out as options, and this is a bit more, none of them are right wingers. So yeah. Lautaro Martinez has been excellent for Inter. Ademola Lookman's been absolutely exceptional for Atalanta. And I think he is the most natural of these options to go on that right-hand side, but he hasn't played there, no. Mm. And then there's Paulo Dybala, who is very much not a right winger, but has been excellent for Roma.
But Dybala, mate, Dybala, he plays right 10, kind of.
Yes.
Like, when they play the front three and he plays as the kind of right-sided 10 with maybe Pellegrini on the left sometimes. Like, he feels like the closest excellent performer. He scored 11, assisted 6 in 20 starts. He's been really good. He feels like the best kind of fit. I think the actual best natural fit is somehow Felipe Anderson, but I don't think he deserves to be in the team. So I would not put him forward, but he plays on the right wing. Well, actually, he plays up front now. Okay, still in the pickle.
I was going to say, I could shift Zaccagni. I think this is probably recency bias, but I think he's been absolutely excellent over the last couple of weeks for Lazio, and I think he would do a job on the right-hand side. But my gut feeling is Adi Lookman. But if you went for Dybala, I wouldn't be devastated.
I don't think we should shift a left winger over. Don't like that precedent. And I feel sorry for Zaccagni in that sense, because he's been excellent, but Kvara. Dean, do you have a preference? I'm thinking Dybala.
Can't we get Rafael Leão into the conversation?
That's exactly the same issue.
Yeah.
I know, but shift Osimhen onto the right and stick Leão for the middle.
We're not shifting anyone anywhere.
It's so, so bad that Rafael Leão wouldn't get into a Serie A front three, isn't it? Like, that is... It seems ludicrous.
Yeah.
Has he ever played on the right? I can't remember it, but...
I can't remember it either. I also think there's a point to be made that, whilst he's still been excellent, his impact has definitely been dulled from last season, which is part
it
of the reason
last season,
that...
Yeah.
It's part of the reason that Milan aren't top of Serie A, because he's not been as explosive and dynamic as he was last season. That's not completely his fault. There's other issues as well. But generally, it's one of those where we're looking at it again. I don't think you'd put him in ahead of Lookman or Dybala this season based on his actual production.
Right. So I'm gonna say we should go with Dybala as a... It's not a shoehorning, but it's not that far off, because he will operate in that general area of the pitch quite a lot, cutting onto the left foot.
Okay. All right. So Paulo Dybala goes in as your third player for Serie A alongside Osimhen and Kvicha Kvaratskhelia. Right. Onwards.
Not bad.
Onwards. Not bad at all.
Okay. Let's go to Spain. Let's go to Spain.
This is hard.
Yeah.
This is hard. Yeah. I really struggled with this.
Okay, so let's start up front where I don't have a definitive answer for you, because while there are two of the world's very best number nines playing in Spain in the form of Lewandowski and Benzema, both have very clearly had their issues this season. Benzema's had some injuries, and he had a really slow period, I think just before the World Cup, or maybe just after, it was several months ago. Lewandowski has scored 17 goals. It's nothing to be worried about, but he's missed some games from suspension. I've watched his last two. He frankly hasn't been very good. He's been up and down, it has to be said. So Lewandowski has 17, Benzema has 14, neither are perfect. I don't know if this is an option, because I'd never play him up front on his own, but Griezmann has arguably been better value than either of them, and very, very important to Atletico Madrid. But he doesn't really fit any of the positions in a front three based on what he does for Atletico.
Oh, there's the other player who I'm about to suggest, which is Iago Aspas, who's having another absolutely sensational season. You know, 12 goals, 3 assists in La Liga. Celta have been very impressive, to be honest. I think a lot of people had them slated for another relegation battle, and they're comfortably mid-table with one eye still, I think, on that last spot for the Conference League. So I think he's been absolutely incredible as per. I feel like I'm the one that always brings up Aspas on this podcast, and every time Dean sighs. But it's... I think that there's a conversation where Aspas probably needs to be in this one as well. And to be perfectly honest with you, I'd be okay with either of them flanking, both of them, in fact, flanking a striker.
Well, that's interesting. Mm. I hadn't considered that. Dean, do you have a leaning on the sort of top three most notable names here on Lewandowski, Benzema and Griezmann? I mean, we don't have to decide now. We can move over to the wings and come back to it. But do you have a take on either of those two or three?
Oh, it's so hard. It's not Griezmann.
Okay.
It's one of the other two. My hunch, when I first like picked my top three, Lewandowski got it. So that was my instinct, was to go to Lewandowski. But obviously it's tough.
Yeah, mine was the same. Mine was Lewandowski by a hair. I didn't feel good about it. I still don't. But it was Lewandowski. Let's put that on ice for a second. And so left wing is the one I feel most comfortable with. And I feel like that is Vinicius Junior's role.
Nailed.
He's been nailed. Superb. The production actually, just in terms of like, you know, not to judge every player solely by this, as I often warn, but 9 goals, 6 assists sort of does us a bit of an injustice, I feel. Like he's been running that flank all season long, plays almost every game, super durable, super consistent nowadays. And he's even got the better of Ronald Araujo recently. Like he's basically completed La Liga this season. I won't necessarily get the La Liga title to show for it, but I think he's been absolutely superb. So I feel really comfortable with Vinny on the left. I don't feel comfortable with anybody though opposite him on the right either. So La Liga still feels like a bit of a mess.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's not been a great season for goals and production, to be honest, in La Liga. It lags behind the other five leagues in terms of the output that we've seen. So I think that it's fair to suggest it is. I'm going to put one down that I say, if Antoine Griezmann isn't in this front three, I'm going to throw a hissy fit. So you're going to have to stick him in at the right wing as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Well, so his opposition on the right wing would be Dembele, who has only started 14 games due to injury problems. I think that's enough to genuinely rule him out. I think we need to have a bigger sample. Rafinha, I think, has come in and out of form too aggressively for Barcelona to be the shout here. Rodrigo has actually played quite a lot of football up front when Benzema's injured. Atletico don't use wingers. Get down to Chukwueze for Villarreal. Excellent season. Brilliant at the weekend. But is he really good enough to be in the La Liga's front three? The only other option I've got for
you is... 5 or 6 goals. Mm. Is he Palathon?
I was going to say it wasn't going to be him, actually, believe it or not. It was going to be Valverde, who's played about half his football on the right.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Nico.
No, unfortunately not. Valverde, he's played roughly half his season out on the right flank. Interesting one. But I'm not taken by any of it. And if Jack's going to throw a hissy fit, I don't want to see that. So maybe we have to put Grizzy on the right.
Yeah.
How often has he played on the right?
Griezmann, never.
so we can't do it because we just weren't allowed to do it with Liao.
But he's not played on the left either. He just sort of plays on the right of the front too, doesn't
floats.
He?
Like, he floats.
He floats. I trust Griezmann enough to do it, would be my thing. I wouldn't trust. If you move Liao to the right hand side, I'd be very uncomfortable. I think if you put Grizzy out on the right, he'd be fine. That's my counter argument to that. I think Griezmann would absolutely be fine on the right. It wouldn't bother me. But I would have gone for a very narrow front three of Iago Aspas and Griezmann as sort of like joint narrow tens behind Lewandowski. So, hey.
You wouldn't have put Vinny into your three. That is insane, mate.
No, I think Vinicius Jr. has been excellent in the Champions League. I think he's been excellent, as we saw in the Copa del Rey. But actually, if you're doing it as a La Liga front three, I think this is a season he'll look back at and be like, I could have, you know, I really could have bounced onwards and I didn't kick on from last year. I don't think Vinicius has been as good. In the same way that I said this about Liao, I don't think Vinicius has been as good this season as he was last season. Part of that isn't his fault, fine. But I think there have been other players that have done more this season in order to where their club's ambitions are, etc., to carry their sides. And I think Iago Aspas is one of them. And I would argue that Izzy Palathorn might be as well.
Dean, I think we should just outvote him here and put Vinny in.
We've already outvoted him, yeah, okay, thank goodness.
Right, Vinny's in. It sounds like we've all reluctantly come to the conclusion that Lewandowski leads the line.
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
I don't feel good about this.
I don't either. And if we were still at Bleacher Report, I would be terrified of the fallout from this once they put it on socials and all the Madrid fans get onto our back. But it's not, so we'll be fine, right?
No, that's not.
Well, yeah, I don't think you can look at it and go, well, neither of them have been particularly brilliant, and Lewandowski's goal tally is higher, and Barcelona are, you know what, 12 clear at the top of the league. So yeah. I think his impact has been more pronounced in the course of the league season. So I don't think there's many arguments with that.
I think we're okay. It's just this right hole.
It sounds like we've all got different ideas.
Yeah. I've got Nico Williams.
I just don't think it's fair to put Griezmann on the right since he never plays there. Like Dybala was a stretch, but he does play right 10.
In which case, I genuinely think you put Griezmann through the middle. I think he's been better than both Lewandowski and Benzema this season.
I agree, but he hasn't played up front. But it's the problem with this game. Yeah, this game sucks.
We're not doing midfield anymore. If we're doing attacking midfielders, he could have played there.
Gabri Vega could have played as well, which would have been a different thing. Look at me and myself, De Vigo boys, having a good time.
Griezmann just not in top three. He's actually not a front three player anymore, Griezmann. He's in a little role on his own.
Yes, that's true. Okay. I'm going to vote for Chukwueze on the right.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
Well, I'm going to be outvoted again, but I'm going to throw my hands in the air and say it all.
Vinicius, Lewandowski, Chukwueze.
No, I think that's considering, yeah, what were the two we've already picked from England and Italy. I think that's a competitive three. Yeah.
It just feels like the most true front three, you know, staying within the
what we're looking for. Yeah,
yeah, our spurious guidelines and such. All right, let's move on to the Bundesliga, and I'm going to start by asking a question: should any of Bayern Munich's players be in the front three?
Jamal Musiala.
I have not seen him play much outside of a central kind of 10 role.
This is the problem again. Yeah. He doesn't fit into a front three, does he?
I would not class him as a front three player here.
If we're doing front fours, Jack, you would be on the right show, but you're in the wrong show, mate.
Musiala has been absolutely amazing, but it's almost all come through the centre. Some of it on the left, but mostly in the centre. And that's a problem here.
Yeah. Yeah. I can accept that. That's
so
fine.
Then
that's
you've got Choupo-Moting. Does anyone want Choupo-Moting?
No.
Although I do love him, and I think he should be given more credence and credit.
Okay. Well, not here. Mane injured. Sané and Gnabry in and out of the team. I think Sané's actually been really good whenever I've seen him, but I've also seen him play central midfield. I've seen him, you know, come off the bench six or seven times. It's been so rotation.
No one's sure what to do with him. I think even he's unsure whether he should be there, and I don't know what's going to happen there.
Yeah. So I've kind of, in my mind, while there's at least one Bayern player that deserves to be given credit in Musiala, I'm not sure if he can take a spot in this team based on the guidelines. But look, up front, The league's top scorer is Niklas Füllkrug, 16 goals for Werder Bremen. Superb. But I think Randall Colomwani is better.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's also got 11 assists, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's 11 goals and 11 assists, which is a pretty good production rate for the big man.
I actually,
it's 12 goals and 12 assists.
I read it as 12 and 10 on who scored, but either way, it's in that area and it's brilliant.
Yeah, I think Kalimwani is the one.
Yeah.
Just found out, we shared a birthday. Yay, he's my birthday pal. I didn't know that.
He'll be so pleased.
He'll be delighted, yeah. That's what.
And he wears number 9. We've got so much in common, me and Kalimwani.
Brilliant. Colomwani up front, leading the line, yes?
No. 100%.
Lock it in. Sold. On the right, I've got two candidates for you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's Moussa Diaby or Julian Brandt.
Yeah, I was going to go with Diaby. Diaby was my immediate thought.
But has Diaby had a good season? I haven't seen enough. I hear it hasn't been good season.
I read about it more than watch him. Yeah, it wasn't
since
great.
Since Xabi Alonso came in, Diaby has been absolutely exceptional. The question is, has he actually played on the right wing? The answer is probably not.
Since Diaby's come in, he's played right forward in a 2.
Yes. So I think he could do a job out there.
But he legit is a right-sided forward.
Yes. I would class him as eligible as Dybala. But I would also say that while he's obviously provided more in terms of production, Julian Brandt has been exceptional, and Dortmund have had streaks where they've been, the best team in the league, and Brandt's been the best or second best player on the team. And while he doesn't quite stack up to Diaby in terms of goals of assists, he's probably been more pivotal to his team than maybe Diaby was to his. And I'm tempted by Brandt.
I don't know about that. I think Diaby's been a really, really key element in this resurgence of Leverkusen, and the fact that they are currently the form team in the Bundesliga suggests to me that things have started to go right. I think they're dark horses of the Europa League. I think that they are in a good place to challenge for the top four. It might be just out of reach. They might have left it just too late. But they're in a really good spot by Leverkusen. And so much of it has been to do with that releasing the shackles from Diaby and allowing him to do what he does best. I think his streak of form has coincided with a rocket up the league.
But how much of that is more linked to the return of Florian Wirtz as the false nine orchestrator? And the Amin Adli explosion. It's not, I know you're not saying it's all him, but I don't know how much credit to attribute to him. And yet with Brandt, I feel like he was an absolutely massive part of the Dortmund run and has had an exceptional season. And when he goes down injured against Chelsea, 5 minutes in, and all the Dortmund fans were like, well, that's it then, we're done. That really tells you how pivotal a cog that he has been.
Yeah, okay, all right. I'm okay with Brandt. I think he's been excellent this season. So I have less fights with him. I just love Moussa Diaby.
Yeah, me too. All right, Colomwani in, Brandt in, left wing. Jack, help us
Vincenzo
out.
Vincenzo Grifo at Freiburg, 100%. I don't have any doubt whatsoever that it should be Grifo. He's had a really, really good season. 13 goals, 4 assists. He's been crucial to, their rise up through the last couple of leagues. It's not just this season, obviously, but Freiburg currently in 5th place. They had a good run in the Europa League, obviously knocked out eventually by Juventus as well, but they're having a bit of a struggle moment at the moment. They're having that little blip at this point, but they're in the semi-finals of the DFB Pokal, and Grifo has been absolutely crucial to everything good that's come out of this Freiburg side. He plays, in these areas. They play sort of a 4-2-2-2-ish kind of space. He plays as a left 10, and I think it would be a real shame and a massive, massive miss if he wasn't in here, because I think he's been the best left-sided player in the Bundesliga this season.
Good argument.
Dino, I don't know who he is, but good argument, yeah.
I obviously don't
watch them though.
I mean, Dino, he has 13 goals, 4 assists. So he's knocking on the door of 20 goal involvements. He has been quietly very good for a number of years. And I'm happy to give Jack one.
Yeah, well, I was going to go with Alassane Play at Gladbach, but that's mainly because I fell in love with him during lockdown when they were my team.
You were in the stands, weren't you?
Remember, I was in the stands.
Yeah. It's that cardboard cutout.
My cardboard cutout. not first time I've been called that. yeah.
Okay.
So he's obviously having a decent season. I've only seen him play a few times. I can't put up a good enough argument against Jack, who sits up till 2 a.m. watching Bundesliga, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, there you go then.
Excellent.
We have to trust you, Jack.
We'll get one.
Okay. We'll let you have that one.
Fantastic. Right. Let's keep rolling, shall we? Who's next, right, Sam?
Fifth and final league, Ligue 1, over in France. And I'll, you know, copy and paste the Bundesliga method to start us off and ask you, how many PSG players would you like to feature in this front three? I mean, they've got three very good forward players. I don't think that they all qualify.
No, it's really hard because obviously in terms of output, they're streets ahead of almost everybody else. Messi's on 14 goals, 14 assists. Neymar's on 13 goals, 11 assists. Mbappe's on 19 goals, 4 assists. It's quite hard to look past them. It's two of the three. I think it's Messi and Mbappe either side of Jonathan David would be my take on this matter.
So Messi does play very central for PSG.
He does, but I'm okay with putting Messi on the right wing. Reasonable thing to do.
There's just nothing wrong with seeing Messi on the right wing. And of course, he sort of drifts over there. If they do play a front three and they tried to put somebody else up top, then obviously Messi ends up over on the right-hand side anyway. So I'm fine with that. And Mbappe obviously commands the left space. I don't think there's anybody else that can hold a candle to him naturally. Golovin, I think, has had a nice season. I really like Golovin. But I'm not saying that he should be in this team ahead of Kylian Mbappe. But Jack, you sort of started us off there with this central striker debate. There's an interesting collection of players. So Jonathan David has 19 goals. Lacazette has 18. Balogun has 18. And Ben Yedder has 17. I'm going to be honest. My vote goes to Ben Yedder.
Yeah, Terra Moffi as well, who has 16. Who obviously moved Lorient to Lyon. So there's that in probably just outside the equation. I'm okay with it being Ben Yedder. I think he's had a phenomenal season, and also his guidance of Ben Skiri has been really lovely to see on top of everything else. Obviously, we've loved Flo Balogun. We've loved what he's been doing at Rennes, but I'm absolutely fine with it being a swan song for 32-year-old Wissam Ben Yedder.
As long as that's right, lads, I don't mind, because I think I'd have gone Balogun. Just on impact and form and like...
In terms of impact and carrying his side, Balogun has definitely done the most of anyone.
Yeah, I feel like he's the most natural, like, to pick as your central, your main man of that attack to finish off what those two are going to be setting up. Jonathan David has the bit more pedigree and he's ready for the next big move or whatever. And like everyone knows who he is at this point. So Ben Yedder was not the name that when I was thinking this morning, who are they going to pick? I really didn't think you were going to go with Ben Yedder, but I can't win. So if you pick Ben Yedder, it's Ben Yedder.
Well, I think Monaco are fourth and Lille are fifth. And that kind of gap between them is quite high at this point. Whereas I think Monaco have had, when you look at the season, I think a lot of people thought, this is probably going to be a kind of turnover season, a rebuild season for Monaco. And the fact that they've been able to get up there and challenge again has been a lot to do with Ben Yedder's goal output. Whereas I think Lille would have expected to be sort of challenging top three this season, and they've fallen off a bit. They're 9 points behind Marseille in third. So, yeah, I mean, it's there's not much between them. And there's not much between them and Balogun. And I think Rennes would have bitten your hand off to be even in the conversation for sort of seventh, sixth before the season began. So there's that to kind of add to the equation as well. I'm okay with kind of any of these. I think they've all been on a relatively level playing field. I don't think there's much between them.
Yeah, I know. The nice collection there. They're very even, Stevens. We didn't really mention Lacazette there, but he's got 18 goals. I don't think we're not going to put him in the team, but he's in this collection with these other guys. But it sounds like we've settled on Mbappe, Ben Yedder, and Messi, which is all five leagues. So the last thing to do is to rank them 5-1. I'll kick us off if you like. I mean, I don't think there's any getting away from it. The Bundesliga front three on paper is the worst one.
Yeah.
It just has to be. So disrespect to them. I really like all the players, but
yeah,
it's not going to stack up to the others that we've picked.
It's not going to compare, is it, on the output, no.
And then it starts to get really difficult. Literally from that
really
moment.
Really difficult.
Because again, you're sort of, in your head, you're like working out, okay, well, on paper, La Liga's front three is exceptional, but like in practice, it hasn't thrilled us. But we've just put the Bundesliga's bottom on paper. So how do you sort of fairly rank these two?
And the fact we struggled to find a right-sided player in La Liga really tells you a lot, I think.
Yeah, it's like the weak link argument, isn't it?
It's like the weak link, like all the others, like we had options in all the positions. And I think for La Liga, the fact that we, you know, they've obviously got great forwards in La Liga, but none of them filled that gap. And that means that whoever we were going to pick and put there was not going to be a strong point of that trio. So however good the other two are, I feel like the right side naturally is going to let it down a little. And just trying to think off the top of my head who they're comparing to here. The other names that we talked about, I think it would have to be La Liga in at four.
I think you're right. I think you look at the right-hand side and it's Saka, Brandt, Messi, Dybala and Chukwueze. And whilst I love Samuel Chukwueze, I think the rest of them are slightly in a higher capacity, in a higher league at this point than where he's at. He hasn't been consistent enough to be in that world-class bracket as far as I'm concerned. Yep. I think the rest of them are probably there or thereabouts. So yes, I think La Liga has to go in at four.
I would then suggest that Serie A comes in at third. And I just feel like maybe the battle.
I think you're talking about Europe's two best players right there. As in this season, Europe's two best players have been Victor Osimhen and Kvara Kvaratskhelia. That's literally where we're at.
I don't think that's necessarily true. They've been really good, but I mean, yeah, Erling Haaland and Bukayo Saka are very, very good competitors there for them. And I don't know if we can put a front line with Messi and Mbappe in any lower than second. I feel like the battle for the torch here is between Haaland and Saka and Messi and Mbappe. And I do apologise to the Serie A lads there. They've been superb, but I think they end up in third.
Totally. And the competition level hasn't been as strong as it should be. I know that's not their fault. Like they've battered everyone. Like they couldn't have done more than they've done. But the levels to which they can be judged at can only go so far, I think. And like I did actually think that you two would be pushing for Serie A to win this whole thing.
I am pushing. the level of competition that they're up against has been so weak has provided the most teams in the Champions League last date, just so we're all aware. Yeah, just so we remember.
Coincidence.
Completely
irrelevant.
Fine. against the team that, you know, the teams that are in the Champions League last date, the Europa League last date, the Conference League last date, Italy's provided more than any other country.
It's a cup competition, mate. It's a knockout. Third, fine.
Third, which leaves us with the big debate.
So who are the three players? What's the head-to-head here? So we've got...
It's Rashford and Erling Haaland and Bukayo Saka taking on Mbappe, Messi and Ben Yedder. Want to apply the weak link argument, then Ben Yedder unfortunately lets the team down in these stakes. He never lets Monaco down, but he would let his team down in this fictional fantasy exercise.
And so would all the others,
if you want to wait towards the very best players in the world, well, I think that the Liga front three here has a more clear suggestion for the best player in the world across two different individuals there than the Premier League can claim. I don't think Haaland or Saka are in the conversation to be the very best in the world. I think Messi and Mbappe is one of the two. So how do you decide that? Yeah.
Do you just do this straight out as a 1-2-3? Would you rather have Mbappe or Rashford?
Mbappe.
Would you rather have Ben Yedder or Haaland?
Haaland.
Would you rather have Messi or Saka?
Messi.
There you are. 2-1. As simple as that.
That's all right.
Surely the way you did
it. But as a three, I think the Premier League's is better.
Yeah, it's got a higher floor, for sure.
Yeah. If you were to field that three in any fixture and field the Liga three in any fixture, I'd fancy the Premier League ones to do more damage. I think that they're better as a three.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean,
it's a very difficult conversation.
Well, it sounds like Jack, you've got the decider here. Is that I think I've picked France and Dean's picked England.
I'm going to go France.
I can't believe we've got it wrong after all that.
I can't be dealing with Prem face accusations after all of that. I, for what it's worth, I would have had the Premier League in at second anyway, but I would have had Serie A above them and Liga in third. But
we put a Farmers League in at one, lads. Oh my day! Who'd have thought?
It's absolute clown chain breeze as usual. right, we had the highest depth of quality in terms of picking a centre forward in the French one as well. We had a selection of people all at very, very similar level. I don't think there was anything like that anywhere else, was there?
We didn't even bother in the Premier League. We just left it at Haaland. We didn't even have a conversation.
Well, I mean, behind that, we're going to be like Ivan Tony.
It's Kane, you know, isn't it? It's Kane, Tony.
It's Kane, mate. Yeah, there's a bloke called Harry Kane. Yeah. Quite nicely.
He plays as a number 10 like Antoine Griezmann.
To be fair,
he's not fair. It doesn't count. Right, so with that, I think it's probably time for us to finish this segment and go on to our third and final section. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC. Time for our third and final segment. And Dean Jones, the floor is yours.
It's time for Melon of the Week. This week's Melon of the Week is Andy Robertson. So, the big story.
This is going to be controversial.
The big story of the weekend, away from the action, was when an assistant referee was seen to elbow Robertson at halftime of the Liverpool-Arsenal game. Kind of funny. Definitely something I hadn't seen before and obviously caused a lot of debate and conversation. To be honest, I think it's been like a big palaver over not a lot. I don't think this is a particularly a big deal. And to be honest, I think Andy Robertson has been a bit of a melon about this whole thing. I should caveat this with I think that Robertson is one of the most unlikable players in the Premier League. I think he is great if you support Liverpool. If you don't, you'll see him as a whiner, somebody that tries to wind people up constantly.
I really like Andy Robertson for what it's worth. I think he's crack, great crack.
There you go. And literally, you know, one of the first times something happens to him out of the ordinary, he's basically crying about it. So let's just look at what happened here. As the halftime whistle goes and everybody starts to leave the pitch, he makes a beeline for the official. He then puts his hand on him. And the lino's had enough, right? He doesn't want this. He shrugs him off aggressively, yes. But you shouldn't be touching him in the first place. And Robertson stands
there. 8-game ban for touching the referee, isn't it?
He's so shocked because he's hit him in the throat. And then he goes after him again. And as the ref walks away, as the lino walks away, he actually, quite faintly, but shrugs his shoulder again. Like he can't, like, get off of me again, almost. Like, so even when Robertson's not there, he kind of does the action again. He's like using his body to say, don't touch me. And I'm sure it's because officials, this is a big deal at the moment anyway, because of what's been happening recently, Fernandez, Mitrovic, all the rest of it. And, you know, they've been talking about it, no doubt about it, in meetings and before games and how they're going to deal with situations like this. And they're fed up of being hounded. Andy Robertson think he's going to come of chasing an official at halftime to try and make a point to him. Is that going to help him in the second half? Probably not. And as it is, Konstantin Hatzidakis, his name, is now under investigation for this. And I understand that. Like, of course, they've got to go through protocol. Like, his elbow did hit him. Like, that's true. And other officials, I think, are, by the sound of it, through reading from news outlets, are actually quite surprised in his reaction because of how over the top it was. But look, I genuinely think he just wanted Robertson to get off him. I think that Robertson is being a bit overboard here, a little bit entitled. I think he thinks he deserves a special case that he gets a one-on-one with a match official at halftime to plead a situation which the official doesn't want or need to hear. He puts his hands on him and refs have had enough. So Roy Keane called him a baby after this game. I'll go one further. I'll call him a melon.
I think this is a really tricky one in so many ways. I think that obviously the contact is instigated by Andy Robertson, and if we're staying by it, we saw a lot of things in that game where referees were pushed. Apparently that's, you know, as we said before, if we're standing by the laws of what were applied recently, that's an 8-game ban.
Well, no, only the ref.
Well, there was hands on the ref as well.
Yeah.
So
Robbo apparently has done nothing wrong because Bruno did that and nothing.
No, exactly. Look, and obviously, also officials can't go around elbowing players. I agree with you that I don't think he tries to hit him in the net, but equally, contact is contact.
If someone came up to you in the street and grabbed your arm, you do exactly the same thing. Yeah. You shrug him off. It's come from behind him and touched him, and your instant reaction is to shrug someone off like that. Yep. And that exact movement that he made.
If someone came up to me and grabbed me in the street, I'd assume they're my friend.
Everybody go and try touching someone randomly when they're not expecting you. Don't try that.
That's not the message.
But you understand what I'm saying. Your immediate reaction if someone does.
And I saw Robertson screaming at this linesman like over and over again in the first half. And Robertson does do this. You know, he's got a very shouty face
and manner. That's okay.
The reason you can easily picture Andy Robertson shouting at someone in your mind is because he's pretty much constantly shouting at people on the football pitch, and he gives Linos a proper earful, and he was giving this one a proper earful during the game. Then he sort of chases after him a little bit at half time, and this happens. I don't think for one second that the Lino has ever actually intended to end up doing what he's done, but he's just sort of shrugging him off, batting him away, and it's kind of happened. It's unfortunate, but it's the latest installment, isn't it? In a whole bunch of, oh, geez, everyone keeps touching the officials, and it's a nightmare.
It is ridiculous. I mean, footballers just need to stop it, basically. It doesn't help you. Nothing ever changes when you do this. Just leave it alone. Mm. Pointless. Right, let's move on to nicer matters. Thanks, everyone, for sending in your shout-outs. It's time for shout-out of the week. This week's shout-out of the week is Z-Rod from the USA. He says, best pod in the world. 5 stars. These guys are so chill. Jack, Sam and Dean form an unbreakable partnership like a great 3 at the back. They're not only funny, but also truly care about their listeners and the podcast as a whole. They are so great at coming up with new topics for Ranks and really just anything in football to talk about. You cannot possibly get bored. Jack is not only the most knowledgeable... Sorry?
What?
I just checked that. It's not a typo. Hang on, let me read that again. Jack is not only...
Yeah, no, it says Jack that. Is not,
Jack
the,
is
most
not only the most knowledgeable. Knowledgeable, hilarious, almost patronizing wordsmith of a host there is, but keeps the balance of the show like a great number 6. Dean is an analytical, fun, good-looking, oh no, it doesn't say that, very intelligent, very intelligent transfer guru. I'd compare him to Willian at Fulham. When he's not there, you feel like you're really missing something. He said, I have a feeling you guys are really like that one. Yeah, I do like that.
You've got same hair as
Sam,
well.
Sam is not only the rank god of all rank gods, he is what helps make this show pop. One of the reasons I love the pod is because they don't only delve into surface level content, they go above and beyond. From exploring the rich history of Athletic Club to the best up and coming prospects, this pod has you covered. I am a right back in high school in the US, and even though my career has just ended, this pod ensures I'll never lose my love for football, even though I'm a Chelsea fan. Oh, commiserations about the last bit, mate, but thanks for the rest of it.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Z-Rod. I appreciate it.
Compared to a famous back three, I mean, if we were Juventus's BBC combo, who's who? I vote Jack as Chiellini because he's scrappy.
Who's the worst? I'll play. I'm not a defender. Do you know, when I don't know if I told you this ever, but when I played for Fulham, I broke my arm in a school rugby match, stupidly. Anyway, came back. And the manager was just trying to give me a game at this point as I was trying to get back in the team. And we played with a back three, and he played me left centre back.
Oh, no, you're not even left footed.
Mate, what am I supposed to do? I literally, where's the instruction manual? I don't know what you do when you stand here. Like, I'm 5'6", whatever I was at the time. Like, I've never defended in my life. I can't head it. I'm not strong. I can't do any of this. Like, who do I even pass to from this position? Like, No, it was awful. I hated it so much. I mean, probably only time in my life I've hated football when I played left centre back. So yeah, I'll just be the worst of whoever the trio is that you're thinking, mate. Because I was not suited.
We'll have to stick you in the middle then.
There's plenty of you're what do you call him? The big fella, he's very Southampton, Vestergaard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh dear. Oh no.
Hey, there you are. There's the middle of the back three. Right. We've had enough gibberish to last a lifetime already at this exact point, but let's hear it, Sam.
Yeah, so this week I've got three big questions which I want to ask you, and they're just sort of questions that have popped into my head or my life over the last couple of weeks that I've squirreled away and noted down in order to get the wise guidance of you two fine gentlemen on. They're completely random and completely different from one another. There is no link whatsoever, and you won't be able to answer at least two of them. So we'll kick off with, what happened to all those UFOs that got spotted in February? And why is it so suspiciously quiet? I've been thinking about this week.
Have you? Mm. I imagine it's just because people realize they were just not UFOs.
That's what they want you to think.
That is probably what they want me to think, but it's also what I believe is genuinely true. So I'd imagine they were just things floating about. They were probably drones. It's probably fine.
Yeah. It's like, it reminds me actually. So in Walton at the moment, I've joined.
There's six UFOs in Walton.
Well, I'm in the like local Facebook group or whatever, where you just like people just moan about the local area, whatever's annoying them. And a couple of people are like last week, everyone look out of your windows. There's a bright red light in the sky. What on earth is it? This has never been there before. Any ideas? And they're like, there's a couple of people like debating what this could be in the black night sky. And some bloke's like, yeah, there's a crane and it's got a red light on the top of it. And you just haven't seen it because it's started there today.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh.
It's always a crane.
There goes our theory. It's always a crane.
Always a crane. They have to have a light drone so that like planes don't fly into them and stuff. And it's just the way it is. Yeah, I mean, I live in a building site, so I've been surrounded by cranes for the last 4 years.
red lights everywhere.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Red light district.
But there was like a little flurry of them, wasn't there? Like three or four spotted in Canada there or was, North America. Yeah. And I've just
they were all cranes.
Fantastic. Okay,
I love the idea of UFOs, but just like the older I get, there's more like ludicrous I think the whole thing is.
Yeah, I agree.
Onwards.
Okay, now question number two. How do you feel about ham and mayo sandwiches, the combination of ham and mayonnaise?
Pretty hot.
I've never had it.
It has to have bread in it as well.
Of course. Yeah, it would need bread.
You got a sandwich with just mayonnaise and ham, is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And butter.
Yeah.
And butter.
Yeah, I have this quite a lot. But it has to be, it's one of those like old school ones. I'll have to have it in like really like crap white bread. You know, like the really like low quality white bread.
It sounds like something my nan used to eat in the 50s or something.
Exactly. My nanny used to make these things when I was at her house. And so I have a deep, enduring love. The only thing that makes these better is if you only have mayonnaise on one side of it and if you crush a load of salt and vinegar crisps into the other side. That
sandwich is good.
But yeah, I'm pretty hot on ham and mayo sandwiches, yeah.
So I think I had my first one ever last week. My wife brought me one. She doesn't often make lunch. I basically do the food. That's why we're so malnourished. And so she sort of went down and I was doing something else, watching Man United Everton or something, and she made me a sandwich. It's like the first sandwich she's made me in probably years. And she chose ham and mayo. And I was like stunned. I'd never had it before. I'd never made it for myself. I'd never made it for her. I'd never seen it before. We had chicken and rocket in the fridge, which I think is a better combo for mayo. And we also have mustard. And I think ham and mustard go really well together. But I never put those two together. And I did not know how to feel. I just had no idea. I just wanted to know if I was alone.
No, I'm pretty comfortable with that. Pretty comfortable.
Yeah, never tried it, mate. I'll have to give it a go.
I actually wouldn't recommend it. But I don't know if I was too stunned to enjoy it. I don't know. Anyway, onwards. The number one question this week is, why do all rhinos look fake? And this is something that I have really come to wonder, because one of the lads on my development, I play football with, Nepalese guy called Arps, and he periodically sends me WhatsApp videos of rhinos walking through the villages and streets of his hometown. And they have a, it's a thing, it happens. And once the rhino gets onto the street, you just get out of the way, and hopefully your car is fine. You know, park it, leave it, just pray it doesn't touch it, and you just get out of the way. Fine. Every single video that he sends me of these, they all look fake. They all look like when Ace Ventura hides in a fake mechanical rhino to spy on the villains of the piece in Ace Ventura 2. I can't get over it. I just cannot get over how fake they look.
I'll be honest, I haven't got that much experience of watching videos of rhinos. So I actually don't, I can't really help you here. But I can imagine that because rhinos aren't something that we see in the world very often, it probably does look a bit mad when you see a video of one wandering through a town.
They just look like all, because they've got like the kind of, you know, the skin, the armor, whatever it is. And it's like the way it's paneled. It looks like panels, and I don't really understand. I suspect maybe that there are no real rhinos and they're all fake. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. You've just played too much Horizon, and now you think all animals are mechanical bots. that's the true element of this story.
That's the truth.
That no one has taken into account. And on that bombshell, I think it really is time that we call this nonsense to a halt. And actually call this podcast a halt. So all that's left for me to do is to say thank you very much to our rank god, Mr. Sam Tai.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much to our Chancellor Groom, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins, Knave of Hearts. Thank you so much for listening today. As ever, we hope that you've enjoyed this episode of Ranks FC. Thank you for your reviews. Thank you for your 5-star ratings. We do very much appreciate them. And we'd love if you shared this podcast with any and all of your friends who you think might enjoy it. So we will see you next week, Ranks Squad. Enjoy the European football coming back this week, and we'll see you then. Take it easy. Peace.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota. So little time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.